For us, the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route.
Lee Oswald has been shot.
Paddock fired out of two adjoining rooms using a device similar to a hammer to smash the windows.
Several flying saucers there of extraterrestrial origin.
Chris Graves.
Come on. Jimmy. Barker, fucking come on. Barker. Franco. Hey Adam, how you doing?
What's going on, bro?
What's going on? We're actually live right now. Is that okay?
Totally fine. Sorry I'm a little late, man.
No, that's fine. No, I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah.
For everyone out there, welcome back to Digging Chris Graves. I am Chris Graves, and I'm a little disheveled right now after a bunch of deliveries today. Just trying to stay afloat, trying to keep breathing. I have Adam from the podcast Deborah Gets Redfilled, which I guess up until recently, I was going to ask you, the podcast Deborah Gets Redfilled, which I always loved the concept of, it was you and your mother-in-law, and you presenting her with different scenarios in terms of conspiracy theories, conspiracy culture, things like that. That kind of came to its logical like conclusion recently. Is that the case?
Yeah, we found the end.
And how did you come to that logical conclusion? Which, like I said, the whole idea was a genius idea in terms of podcasting, like literally present to someone that is not acclimated to the culture in which a lot of people, like a lot of our audience has been in terms of whether it's conspiracy theories in terms of, you know, tragedies or world events and things like that. What what basically made it, what was the end goal in the end? Like, you know, pun not intended, but what was the end goal there with the podcast? Because it really was, I actually will tell you as a fan, I'm kind of saddened that it did come to an end, but in terms of your own life and Deborah's life and your other co-hosts that you had in the past, like, what brought you to that logical conclusion?
Well, I think I got to the point. I mean, the goal of the show was to turn a normal blue-pilled liberal into someone that was what we would call awake and, you know, able to see the world and the bigger picture of what's going on around us. And it didn't work, you know, in the end. So there wasn't any like resistance or anything like that to it. It just, I got to the point where I realized I changed a lot during the course of the show as well. And by the end, all I really wanted to get into was parapolitical stuff, Program to Kill, PatCon, things like that. And I wanted to pursue it at a intellectual level that I don't think Deborah was cared to or was capable of keeping up with.
Now, have you guys thought about in terms of like, well, would Deborah, I know she's not here right now, but has she wanted to continue like in terms of like the in podcasting in general for different subjects, maybe like, or even yourself, have you thought like down the line, you know, I may revisit some of this stuff, or have you kind of just kind of thrown everything up in the air where you're like, you know what, I did all the searching that I wanted to do in terms of like publicly and things like that.
I miss it sometimes. And then I am also, you know, really happy to have the spare time nowadays. It was getting towards the end where like I'd have a show scheduled in the evening, and you know, leading up to it, I would just start getting really anxious and kind of dreading it. And I'd always feel good afterwards. It was kind of like going to the gym, you know, and you know, you never want to do it, and then when you're done, you feel good. And I just got kind of tired of that. I didn't feel good about the quality of the show that I was putting out. And I wasn't able to do the amount of research that I'd like to prepare for guests. I can kind of get by, but interviewing people's hard. You know how having a podcast is. And I was kind of saddled with like keep interviewing the guest and keeping Deborah up to speed. So it was kind of I was getting like it was like double hard for me. And she did pretty well on a lot of stuff too, but. As for like her wanting to podcast, I'm sure if I wanted to do shows with her again, she would be willing to. And I like being a guest on people's show every once in a while now. And maybe in the future, if there's someone that knows as much as me or more than me and wants to do a, you know, deep cut parapolitical show, I would consider doing something like that, but much more anonymous this time around.
Have you thought about doing other shows with Mr. X? Because I remember going way back, I remember you and Mr. X are actually when I first appeared on your podcast for the Dumbs segment, you know.
Yeah,
that and then the Kirk Cobain.
Phil Schneider stuff, man.
Yeah, the Phil Schneider stuff, which I'm still...
He's fake and gay, dude.
I'm still kind of iffy about that.
Yeah, he's fake and gray.
right. Now,
He left the show just, I think, because he had a lot going on, and then he started doing a show with somebody else, so I think he's content doing that.
Okay. All right. No, fair enough. No, I understand. Cause I thought that was besides when it wasn't you and Deborah, I thought that was a good combination with you and Mr. X. Like,
yeah, I like doing those shows too. I think I've become a little bit more rigid and since I've had him, and towards the end when I was still doing shows with him, I was kind of changing my worldview religiously. I don't think it really jived with his worldview. And, you know, like,
well, that's actually something right there. Like, I don't want to be too intrusive, and you could tell me to fuck off or whatever. You know, I don't know if that's the professional way to say it, but you could tell me to F off or whatever. What was the your changing worldview, if you're willing to go into that? Because that's fascinating too. Because I mean, everyone, you know, a human being is supposed to be able to change in terms of like what the new information and experiences that they have. What exactly, if you're willing to go into it, what was that changing worldview during the podcast's life?
You know, I started the show in the dark days of 2020. When it was bad, you know. I live in the suburbs of Portland, Oregon, and we got it rough there, you know. Like, people were doing the deal. It was hard to get by without, you know, taking the medicine, wearing the thing on your face, and I did it the whole time, and it just wore on me. And
the diaper, if you will. Yeah.
And you know, at that time, I think I would consider myself an anarcho-capitalist.
Right.
Libertarian. And, you know, that was just, I was trying to kind of, I was trying to enact kind of like a Christianity through with using, liberty as my God. And I think that's what a lot of people that get stuck in that mindset do. I just kept digging deep into conspiracies, and you know, I didn't get to China. I got to Jesus and the Eastern Orthodox version of that. I go to Russian Orthodox Church now. I'm baptized, and yeah, it's. I'll tell you what. Like, if you want your phone to stop ringing, get sober. And if you want people in like podcasting to stop listening, half your viewers, and you want people to stop asking you to do shows and stuff, become a Christian.
All right. Fair enough. I understand. Yes. Okay. All right. Was there a conspiracy that went too far for you?
What do you mean too far? Like offensive too far, or like
not even offensive, but like beyond like your comprehension of like this is a bunch of bullshit that people are trying to make money off of, or there's really nothing in terms of like a true basis or fact with this? Because I've come across a bunch of those myself.
I mean, it's on a broad scale. We can break it down into little genres from there. It's just aliens.
Reptilians.
I believe in reptilians more than I believe in aliens from outer space. So, you know.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not saying, and that doesn't mean I believe in
reptilians. No, I know.
But I believe in reptilians probably in a, you know, in a,
Well, let's go into that actually, because like, I actually think, full disclosure, folks, I haven't really opened up about this. I usually talk about the school shooters or 9/11 and things like that. But with the reptilian thing, it seems like that's more literally it's like a different species. Like when it comes to, like, I've heard of the Nordics that are like white hair and blue eyed, things like that. I've heard of the grays, the classic grays, which I actually think, whatever people are seeing with that instance, it's some kind of biomechanical suit, almost, you know, not different from like astronauts and things like that, human astronauts. But the reptilian thing has always got me, where I don't, you know, I know there's references to, you know, serpents in the Bible and things like that. And I'm not saying that, you know, it couldn't be a legitimate other class of species in terms of extraterrestrial life or interdimensional life. Even I even open up myself to that. I think it's probably more interdimensional than outer space, like just in terms of the how far different species would have to travel to get here without using like wormholes and things like that. Interdimensional makes more sense to me than anything else. But once you start going into that, or the idea that maybe some of these aliens that are seen are human beings from thousands of years in the future, which I, you know, I'm open to that too. I'm open.
Yeah, I talked to Jared Murphy before, and that's his whole thing. It's not aliens worse, it's us. That's his book. Right. You know, I don't even think very deeply about it. Mostly I think it's military stuff. I think people are maybe being, you know, controlled by the government when they think they're being abducted and probed and things like that.
See, I thought that too, because I came across that in the 90s, even on the internet, like programs where they were designed to look like they were, you know, alien abductions, but it was actually very, very Earth-based military experiments and things. And then when you try to explain that to other human beings, you know, their eyes glass over and they want to put you in a FEMA camp or whatever the hell it is. You know,
yeah.
Whatever,
you know. Yeah. I'm not saying there's not unexplained non-worldly things, but I think I think the majority of it is government, you know, black ops stuff, and then maybe some evil demon spirits, you know, who knows. There's a great book by Father Seraphim Rose, who is an Orthodox theologian and priest in the, you know, he died in the early 80s, but he wrote a book in the 70s, way back when. And it was a critique of alien ufology and the New Age, pretty much. It's called Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future. I recommend it to everybody.
Were you able to interview the author there? That pastor?
No, he died in the early 80s.
Oh, okay. So obviously, right.
But I've been to the monastery in Northern California where he's going to be. He's not officially canonized as a saint yet in the Orthodox Church, but he will be pretty shortly. And I've been to, you know, I've seen venerated his remains in Northern California.
If you don't mind, for people that want to pay their last respects, you said Northern California is like San Francisco, or is it like
he did live in San Francisco when he became an Orthodox monastic, and then he started a monastery way up out in the middle of nowhere. The closest place it would be in California that anyone would know is to Redding, California.
Okay. So
it's in a little tiny know-nothing town called Platina.
Platina, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and you're in Oregon, right? Let's not give away your exact location.
Yeah, I'm way up in the very tip-top of Northwest Oregon, an hour to the coast and an hour to Portland.
And the last few times that we've talked, I brought up the subject of black helicopters.
Yeah.
It seemed to have kind of, in terms of the mainstream conspiracy culture, kind of like disappeared in the late 90s, like before 9/11 and things. But you've had some run-ins, right? Like it's always fascinating to bring that back up, because it seems like that subgenre of conspiracy culture kind of went out the door with like the late Jim Keith. With his book,
Black Helicopters Over America, is that what it was?
Parts 1 and 2. Yeah, that's right.
I think I've got one of those out in my garage.
That's right. You've actually had some instances, let's say run-ins, but were they run-ins? Would you consider, is that fair to say? Like,
no, but they're
or at least strange. they let their presence be known to you.
Yeah, right? Like the day that, you know, my wife and I moved into our, we live on a 15-acre homestead, and we moved in August of 2021. We're coming up on 3 years. And first day, couple of unmarked flat black, the big ones, like Sikorskis, like the big long ones, flew overhead. And it felt pretty ominous, just weird, like, you know, there's no escape. Because we got out of the city and came out here. And I see them from time to time. I think I just saw a couple a few weeks ago. They're always kind of lurking around. But, yeah.
There's still no markings on them? Like,
no. And I've always understood that if there's some National Guard base or something around here, that they're supposed to, even if they're flat black, they're supposed to have some sort of
marking
number or something on them.
A number designation on the tail.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Now, has that ever had a chilling effect on you? I mean, maybe it's a dumb question, but like, the fact that you were able to be, you know, have a podcast and have an outlet to the masses, if you will, like, especially when you were a guest on shows like America Unplugged and other bigger podcasts and everything, have you ever felt like maybe they failed in the literally what they would call the chilling effect? Like, they want to make their presence known and they want to instill fear in whatever population that thinks that they can get away from like the regular structure of the public in terms of like cities and things like that.
Yeah, it never really freaked me out that bad. I mean, it's an eerie feeling knowing that, like, but I've already come to grips with where we live and what's going on in the world. You know, I know all this stuff. You know, finding religion helps out with all that. Like, it doesn't, you know, I'm preparing for death every day. That's all I do. And that just means, you know, living life the way that I want to live it. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm hoping to die or anything like that. I'm definitely not.
Right.
But I know there's
you want to live life the way by your own standards.
Yeah. But there's no escape from the material world and how it's presented to us in this day and age. And you know, I think the quicker you come to that conclusion, the quicker that it becomes that you can.
It's more free. Free.
Yeah, free.
Now, since the podcast has ended, what have you, if you're willing to go into it, what have you been up to in your day-to-day life, and how can people that supported your podcast from before it came to the logical conclusion, how else can people support your efforts? Because you really are an outstanding person, like just from afar, like as someone looking in, that really doesn't want to have an outlet as far as podcasting and things like that. How can people still support your efforts for everyday life?
Well, if they're interested in like what my wife and I are doing out here on the farm, they can follow us on Instagram. Our place is called Rising Tide Homestead. That's all one word on Instagram. And you can just kind of see our livestock, our animals, and goofy stuff that goes on out here.
No, but people need those kind of videos, dude, when it comes to animals and things. Like, yeah. I literally, it can be, when it comes to, like, the horrible shit we see every day on X or Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
Just seeing, yeah, like, videos of just nature and animals, like, out and about, like, it does provide a service to people, like, therapeutically, myself included, which I've needed a lot of that lately.
Yeah, I mean, I raise sheep, and I love them so much. They're my favorite. But dogs are my favorite animal, but sheep are like a close second, and they're just such beautiful, majestic creatures. And I've got 20 of them, and it's really nice. I just get, there's little lambs out there. And
now, do you utilize things like, if you don't mind me asking, like goat's milk and things like that? Because I've heard people, you know, with farms that, you know, goats actually produce some pretty good milk besides, you know, as a cow substitute.
Their goat milk is a great thing to do, because like to get milk out of a goat is much, like, as far as like what you put into it to get the milk out is way easier than get it out of a cow, you know, because goats eat everything that's available, you know.
Right.
You just put them out in the blackberries and they'll give you milk. We don't have goats. We might want to get some sooner or later for like, you got to get rid of blackberries into milk. You can milk sheep as well. I have a couple. Sheep's milk is the best milk that I've ever had. I got a couple dairy sheep breed called the East Frisian, and with the goal of milking them. And I had the opportunity last spring after one of them had lambs. And it was a disaster. I was not successful in getting milk out of her. She did not want me to milk her. She would, you know, go pee on me every time and kick my hand.
Well, I could understand that. I wouldn't want milk either. You know, I understand.
I might. I'd really like to be able to do it. you just have to really put the time in and train them to be handled. So maybe sometime in the future, I really like to do it because raw milk, you know, my wife and I buy raw milk from somebody close to us, and it's expensive, man. Like people do
really?
Milkshakes. Yeah, it's like, you know, people probably get it for cheaper out there, but you know, going rate in Oregon is like $12 for like half a gallon from a farm, you know?
Right.
And so yeah, the way to make money on a homestead is raw milk and eggs.
Well, what would your, I think I asked you this in the past and forgive me for not remembering right now, but for people that want to get out of the city and actually, you know, get away from, you know, the government teat, if you will, what would the best course of action, or has it kind of gotten smaller since like the pandemic and everything, where it's even more an uphill battle to try to take the reins of your own destiny in terms of your own land and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Fed and the interest rates and things like that, I couldn't buy a house right now.
Right.
I my wife and I got lucky and hit everything at the right time. You know, we bought a house in the suburbs of Portland when it was doable. We made a little bit of money when we sold our place and were able to get in here. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news and say like that ship has sailed for people, but first time homeowners, or if you're trying to like upgrade or move to land, I mean, what people are going to have to do is move to places that are less desirable. You know, states, they're going to have to leave the state, which I don't want people to do. I want people to stay with their families and, you know, generationally grow. But if you live coastally, I mean, you're in Massachusetts. I mean,
I'm in Massachusetts, and right now to be able to survive,
I
have to deliver Pringles to college kids at 2 a.m. and get $3 tips.
Yeah.
So it's getting fucking very, very scary when it comes to trying to survive right now.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm actually asking for myself more than anybody in the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a way to do it would be to, you know, find a farm of someone that has, you know, worked off of you, or I know there's apps out there that are for people to like go live at farms and work and stuff like that. I don't know. I think it's hard to make money doing that kind of stuff, but yeah.
Well, if you're willing and able, then yeah. And like myself, I'm willing and able. So
yeah, I mean, it's just,
I'm actually waiting on trying to do the waste management thing with the garbage truck thing. Like people go, oh, what, you want to be a garbage man? I just want to be able to fucking survive right now. Pardon my language or whatever, but.
Yeah, I mean, we left, we lived in San Francisco, and for a family, I think the poverty level was like $160,000 a year or something like that. It's insane, you know?
You barely make $10,000 a year, right?
Yeah, and like I was never going to be able to buy a house down there. And so I moved to a place where I could. And, you know, people are just going to have to get uncomfortable or stay in the situation that they're in, I think, at this point.
To be able to survive, I think you're right. No, you're absolutely right. Well, going back to your podcast, during the life of it, were there certain lessons that you were able to learn from your guests and the topics that you would provide that have stayed with you since the life of the podcast?
I mean, I learned a lot of negative things. I learned that a lot of people are full of shit.
Yeah.
I'm really good at spotting it now.
Pointed that out. You actually, I want to credit you. You pointed that out with a couple of people that wanted to hire me to do research, and I won't name their names, but when you pointed them out and I found out like throughout the last year or so that you were spot on, my friend. Terms of, like some of these more high profile people.
Yeah, I might know who you're talking about.
They really are full of shit. Yeah.
Yeah. That and you know, the main thing is I've realized in this day and age, the way that the polarization of the world is just that there's no change in anybody's mind. People are dug in. And then I think, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think that there's a lot of people that aren't intelligent enough I just think there's a lot of people that aren't deep thinkers that.
No, but I want to give you credit. No, I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but I want to give you credit, my friend, because there were a few things we had conversations about where I went back and looked, and you were spot on when it came to like people going back on their word, especially when it came to like the COVID situation and either doing shows, you know, in public places that required paperwork for vaccines and things. And I went back and reevaluated it. You were spot on. And I want to commend you for that. I'm not trying to kiss your ass, but like you were spot on, dude. Like, in terms of integrity of a person, the integrity.
Yeah, I just think that there were tons of people, and I know people. Mark Claire from the Mark Claire Show is an awesome dude. He lost his job because he didn't want to do the medicine. I think he's gotten it back recently through legal action. But you know, I got an email, you know, when I was still working. I was an elevator mechanic, and I got an email from my company, ThyssenKrupp Elevator, saying if you don't have the medicine by December 8th, you're not fired, but you don't get to come to work.
Which basically you're fired.
Yeah, you're fired, but you don't get any of the unemployment or anything like that. You know, they went back on it because it was awesome. The union didn't do shit for us, so that kind of soured. I knew that would happen, but our whole service department, which is the guys that go and fix elevators in existing buildings when they're broken and get people out when they're stuck in them and stuff like that. Like 90% of those guys were like, well, we're not doing it. So, I mean, that'll shut down a whole city. And, you know, but I was going to lose my job. And then, you know, a guy says, oh, I'll never perform at a comedy club that requires a vaccination card. And then does it 2 weeks later. I mean, you can't cancel one show. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was referring to. And that made me reevaluate the people that, you know, I had come into contact with at that time. And I always wanted, like, I never was able to tell you like publicly on like a podcast or whatever, but you were fucking spot on when it came to that shit. And you know, that person or whoever that we may be talking about, I mean, they have their career or whatever, but you know, you kind of have to weigh like in terms of the public's best interest and how you're presenting yourself to the public. I mean, if you're requiring people to go see you, like requiring to have these experimental shots or whatever, you're putting people's health at risk. And, you know, not to get on a political soapbox, but it's not really political. It's people's fucking health.
Yeah. And what do you make of like all this stuff that's like recently coming out? I mean, it's not even in my wife and I's lives. It's not even a reality. You know, once we moved out here, it was awesome. You know, like
you have your own lives. Yeah. You're away
from the bush. An hour from Portland, but it was like, if you put a sack over somebody's head and drove them to my house, they'd think they're in the Ozarks or the Appalachians, you know, and it wasn't a thing out here. You didn't have to comply at all. There's no compliance. I mean, there was compliance because there's a bunch of like obese boomers out here, but like, but you didn't have to, if you didn't want to. And, but what do you make out of just all this like recent gaslighting? Like, did you see, Chris Cuomo recently on PBD?
Yeah.
Talking about how he's on ivermectin and how his back's injured.
Oh, you mean, yeah, Chris Cuomo, yeah, the former governor of New York that made
no, a the picture. CNN guy.
His brother, who was literally
the main.
He was doing like Joe Jackson, right? He was telling everybody like that he was quarantined at the time.
Yeah, he did a fake reemergence after being quarantined from his basement, even though he was filmed without a mask on outside during the time when he was supposed to be in his basement with COVID. And he was doing the nightly things with his brother every night.
Yeah.
And now he's on Patrick Bet David's show saying that he's on ivermectin and that, you know, it's just gaslighting, man.
Even his brother there, Andrew Cuomo, the the former mayor of New York City or governor of New York State, right?
The whole sausage guy.
Yeah, he was trying to be like Mr. Godfather, like he was Mr. Yeah. guy. Yeah, yeah.
And remember, I think Chris Cuomo, somebody called him Fredo.
Fredo, yeah, he got his he said for
Italian people, calling them Fredo is like calling a black person the N-word.
Right, right.
I can say to you as a joke or a wop, that is not true.
Calling him chooch and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's a clown. He's a clown, and he made a whole bunch of money, from what I remember. He made a bunch of money with people, funeral homes during the COVID thing, too.
Yeah.
And a lot of elderly people ended up dying, and he hasn't been charged with anything.
No.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what to make of it. It's, CNN, Fox News, it's all the same bullshit to me. And I think, you know what, when people that take the stance that you and your wife did, you're all the better for it, mentally, physically, like, because all that shit, I'm telling you, dude, like all the nightly news and everything, it's poison for the masses. It's meant to keep everybody down, their spirit. Like when you're, sorry about my phone, when you're around like your animals and things like that, that's nature and things. That's why there's something really important. And I hope that you keep it up with your Instagram channel, right? Like all the animals and stuff, like just seeing that first thing in the morning and not all these other horrible stories about, oh yeah, this black guy got shot like 10 times by the cops and all, like every fucking day. And I don't mean to keep using that language, but it just pisses me off. Like all these horrible stories are meant to divide and conquer, like every single day with Elon Musk and, oh yeah, he's going to be all about free speech. He's about free speech when it comes to like what's best for him, you know, things like that. So I never really put faith in any kind of a stock into Elon Musk is going to be the savior of the First Amendment or anything like that. But for people like yourself that have Instagram channels that are showing a different, a better side of life when it comes to like regular nature and things like that, and that, you know, not all life is this bubble, that this negativity bubble that we've been accustomed to for so many years now. I just want to, again, I don't want to keep coming across like I'm kissing your ass, but you're doing a better service than what the mainstream media should be doing for the masses and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a hard life out here. Oh, there's my wife right now. out the
window. But anything worth doing is hard in life, right? Yeah. Like I've heard that a bunch and I believe it.
That I have bad days out here. And good days. It's really nice now. I live in on the coast of Oregon. It's pretty bad weather here most of the year. I'm walking around in the mud and rain gear the whole year. And halfway through May, the sun comes out, man. Everything just like starts drying out. And there's 8 different shades of green outside my window right now, and it's just insanely beautiful and warm and nice. And yeah, it makes it all worthwhile. Like just being out in the sun, like you forget how nice it is. In a lot of places that, you know, even if it's cold in the wintertime, you get like a week of sunshine and dryness. And here it's just raining and gray and dark the whole time. So when it comes
where I'm from, we only get 2 months of summer and 2 months of winter, it seems like. We either go from like extreme like cold to hot and humid.
Yeah.
And now I'm not going into like climate change and things because that becomes a political thing too. Like, and I don't even want to get into that bullshit, but like there's something's going on with our weather, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like we get sprayed nonstop out here. But like I said, that's one of those things. Like, what am I going to do? Go stand on the corner with a sign and a megaphone, or am I going to go, you know, get back to my life and like do the things that are gonna, you know, benefit my family.
What do you have? No, I think you should do what's good for you and yours, your family and everything. And I don't want to say envy, because envy is one of the sins, right? But like I appreciate seeing people like yourself where you actually were able to build a family in a certain place, or whatever, away from all the bullshit. And it's very inspiring. And do you have any goals when it comes to just your day-to-day life with your family and like your property and stuff? Do you have like the podcast has kind of run its course and you're leaving it open where you may return to do some kind of podcasting in the future. But when it comes to your day-to-day life, do you have any personal goals that you want to attain or work towards? Because I feel like that's really important for people to know too.
Yeah, I mean, I want to have kids. My wife and I are trying real hard right now for that. And other than that, I just want to continually improve my property and my farm and learn new skills. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm always trying to improve at that. Always just chasing the.
Do you think you would ever try to teach it at a certain point, or is it just more like for your personal thing?
Yeah, I mean, I could. It would be cool to. There's no school. I got to drive pretty far to go to jiu-jitsu. So there's a little town kind of close to me, and it'd be a goal one day to like maybe have a little gym or something like that. Just because I think it benefits so many people. Yeah. If anybody wants to reach out and ask questions about that, it's it's in the top five most important things of my life. I've trained jiu-jitsu for 16 years. Wow. I do it 3 days a week now. I'm 44 years old. I'm not very good, but
but you're doing it though. No, whether you're good or not, you're still fucking doing it. Someone like myself, right, that is like about 165, 170 pounds, that's 40 years old with a heart condition. Would you suggest that for someone of my archetype? Or you'd be like, just do some walk around like the local mall that's like dying out or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think it's for everybody. And I think, a big trap that people get into a lot is that they're always like, well, I got to get in shape before I go.
Right.
And that's a thing that people will say perpetually and never end up going. So, I'm sure there's some place you could go that's close to you. Go in, you talk to the owner, the head instructor, tell him your situation, tell him I got to start slow, and you start slow. And you go to jiu-jitsu 3 days a week, even if you're not going 100% and doing a bunch of crazy stuff, you're going to start losing weight, you're going to start getting in shape, and yeah, it's a life changer.
Okay. All right. No, that's awesome. That's good to know, because that gives a person like myself or that archetype some hope that maybe they didn't have. Because you hear that, you need to get into shape first before you try to do somersaults or whatever the fuck, you go to some of these classes or whatever.
It's definitely, a lot of people have a hard time with it because you're going to be bad at it for a really long time and you're going to get submitted and choked out by like 95 pound Chinese girls and stuff like that.
Some people might sign up just for that, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry. Not me.
But I've done it for so long and been just, I'm not bad at it. I'm a purple belt, which is halfway there, but I'm mediocre, right. I'm what they call an attendance based purple belt. I've been, it's hard and you fail constantly. And I think that being comfortable with that failure in life, makes it so you're willing to go out and try new things and not expect to be good at things right out of the gate. And right. I think people that don't have that experience with failure, it's like positive failure, and I think people that aren't comfortable with like not being good at something, so they don't do it a lot of the time, and I don't have that. That's the one good thing, that like I can try to start doing something and figure it out on my own and be like, okay, I worked all day at this thing and it didn't work out. It's a real bummer, but I learned how to like do it for next time. Tomorrow I got to go fix it and make it work. So
that's a good mindset. That's a healthy mindset to have. Yeah. I wish I had that mindset. I'm working towards that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't all happen at once. It's a long, long road.
Right, right. Anything worth doing, like we were just, I mentioned to you before, anything worth doing in this life is probably going to be fucking really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just for anyone out there, like I need to hear, I'm going to watch this again. So I'm hearing it for my own benefit too. That anything worthwhile in this life is not going to be easy. And I need to accept that myself. But anyway, but in closing, I wanted to just ask you two more things. Yeah. Do you have any book recommendations for people? I know you wrote a book about the PatCon thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can recommend that one, but I have one that I just read that's not very well known by anybody. Hold on. I'll go grab it real quick.
Sure, sure. Again, this is Adam from the podcast Ibra Gets Red Pilled, which sadly has come to an end. It's a logical conclusion, but anyone to go back and just check it out on wherever podcasts are available. Check out the whole library of Deborah Gets Red Pilled. It's a very, the episodes are fascinating and very informative. So I suggest that to everybody. Check out Deborah Gets Red Pilled.
Yeah, we've got everything for everybody on there. Every conspiracy.
You had a Patreon page at one point too, right? Or
did we did have a Patreon. Okay. That was one of the things that kind of led to the downfall of the show. Is that once you have people giving you money for stuff, then you're like beholden to them.
You're so obligated.
Like, like, you got to do it.
Right.
And
kind of took the joy out of it after a while, maybe.
Yeah, and I had definitely had some good shows on that paid feed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it felt weird just like releasing it to like 20 people, which is what I think I had 25 people at the most, dude. I had Bart Sabrell on my show twice.
Yes. And he was just on Rogan again.
Just on Joe Rogan, man.
Yeah.
That was crazy. Did you listen to it?
I watched the whole thing like three times.
Man, that Jamie's a nasty little guy, dude.
Oh, he was he was fighting him the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But book recommendations. Just read this book. It's called The Psychopath Machine.
Okay.
Yep. By Steve Smith. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of it. I haven't had a chance.
This guy on William Ramsey's show.
Oh yeah, I know really William Ramsey.
He was like a Canadian hippie. He stole a car.
Right.
To try to like go cross country to go to Vancouver.
Yeah.
In the late '60s.
Yeah, from like Nova Scotia to Vancouver, which is basically going from Massachusetts to Los Angeles here.
Yeah. And he, so instead of sending him to jail, they find acid on him.
Yeah.
He had a couple tabs of LSD in his pocket. They send him to Oak Ridge Mental Hospital.
Wow.
It's a true story. And he gets just massively MK-Ultra there. They just like perform all this drug tests on him, LSD stuff, scopolamine, all this crazy gnarly stuff. And then they let him out. And for like the rest of his life, he's like in contact with these kind of like rat line Nazi leave behind guys who are like.
Oh, like NATO. Like after World War II, the thing that I always talk about with the school shooters, what the hell was it called?
Gladio.
Gladio, yes, yeah, in Italy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. They're called like the Brotherhood is what they're called, and he ends up like, it's just crazy. He ends up with like,
wow,
all over the place. He goes down and meets some of them in South America, and they're like death squad guys and in Nicaragua in the 70s, like going around killing commies and stuff. It's a crazy book. Book is a quick read. It's like 200 pages. I read it in a couple days. It reads like a fiction book. It's pretty awesome. I recommend that one. And then as far as my favorite stuff is Program to Kill by Dave McGowan. I love Dave McGowan. I'm not a huge fan of his writing style. Like, I think Program to Kill and Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon were both pretty tough for me to get through just because they're written so densely. But the information in them I cherish, Program to Kill is a life changer.
So I actually, not to cut you off, but I just had a 3.5 hour conversation with Dave's brother, Craig, about the last days of Dave's life.
On your show?
No, it was a phone conversation.
Oh, wow.
Craig wasn't that comfortable going on the air. He may do that eventually, but just from the stuff that me and him were talking about, and I'm going to check back up with Craig, you know, in a little while, but the stuff he was talking to me about, like what he experienced and what his parents saw with the Mick Martin thing, because they lived.
Oh, they were hip to it. I didn't know that.
Well, Dave and Craig's mother worked close to, I think it was Manhattan Beach, I think, yeah, where it was close to that. And she was kind of privy to these children that she tended to believe their stories when people like Dave thought it was all bullshit, like in the media. And then Dave started doing some research later on, and he totally turned around his stance. And he was like, you know what? My mother was right. My brother was right. Because Craig knew some shit about some of the cops around that area too. So that was some of the dark. I'm telling you, this guy Craig was awesome, and my heart really goes out to him. But the stuff we were talking about was some of the darkest shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. So Program to Kill, Weird Scenes, is it Strange Scenes? It's Strange Scenes, right? Or Weird Scenes?
Weird Scenes inside the canyon. Yeah.
His moon landing book, Wagging the Moon Dog.
Wagging the Moon Dog is fantastic.
It's hilarious too. Like, there's a chapter where he just talks about everything. The moon landing is my litmus test for people, in case you haven't noticed. Like, if you believe in the moon landing, like, you're not a...
He goes into Playtex, the bra company, creating those sophisticated cooling and heating suits that the astronauts...
Yeah, but I think it's like the second or third chapter, he just like goes through a list of everything that's needed, that would have been needed, or that they said they had. And like,
the fuel to get up there.
It needed to be inside like an 11-foot circle.
You remember that? Yeah, that's right.
And it's, if you go to, I'm sure you've
pushed it. It's Center for an Informed America.
Center for Informed America.com. You can get a free audio version of that book. Okay, so that, and then as far as PatCon stuff goes, if you just want like a no-nonsense, no-conspiracy book written by a reporter pre-
1989,
pre Randy Weaver, pre Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was 1989, I think.
Read The Silent Brotherhood. I forget the guy's name who wrote it, but it's a good book telling the story of the original version of the Order, which was a bank robbing crew out of the Pacific Northwest and Northern Idaho, Eastern Washington.
And so was it true that one of their trials were about to go on around the same day of the Oklahoma City bombing? I think I remember something like that.
Possibly. I don't know. That could have been some other PatCon related thing. I'm not sure. They might have all been convicted by 94.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, yeah. Because I was thinking the Elohim, however you pronounce it, Elohim City.
Or yeah, it might have been the ARA guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That was the late 80s, right?
Yeah. And then if you want the book that's going to make you a paranoid schizophrenic about PatCon, read Aberration in the Heartland of the Real by Wendy Painting. It's as good as it gets. And she deserves more credit than she'll ever get for writing that book. It's incredible. And if you don't want to read a 500-page book that's going to make you a paranoid schizophrenic, go to the Program to Chill podcast and listen to the 11-episode series she did with Jimmy, the host, on OKC. It's
Program to Chill, I had heard a lot about. I even had someone that was on there a bunch. I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. I can't remember at the moment, but I'll tell you.
He's a commie, but he does great research and puts out interesting shows.
Well, I want you to know there's a book that's going to be coming out soon by Donald Jeffries called Hidden. It's basically supposed to be Hidden History 3.
Yeah.
But it's called Hidden. It's called the publisher Skyhorse changed it for some reason, because Hidden History, which was actually pretty financially sound with them, apparently they didn't want to continue with putting a number after hidden history, like a proven like success.
Yeah.
So I think the subtitle is Inside the American Memory Hole. I should know this because I'm one of the two researchers for it.
Yeah.
But I was able to find there was a daycare center lady by the name of Daniel Walsh, I believe. Now I'm coming across as stupid, but anyway, I was able to find the daycare center owner that was forced to move right before the bombing, and she wouldn't talk. She wouldn't come out. Her husband was in charge of the security of the Murrah building at the time too. He got let go eventually too. That's coming out in August, so I just wanted everyone to check out. Just check out anything Donald Jeffries related. That's coming out in August. We go into some of the characters that got forgotten during the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, I'm helping a couple guys doing a show. I'm just like the behind-the-scenes guy that looks stuff up for them while they're doing live streams on StreamYard.
Yeah.
It's called Already Dead. And it's this guy Jose from the No Way Jose podcast and this guy Austin from the Underclass podcast.
Yeah.
Show together called Already Dead.
Wow.
It's a parapolitical show that you can like do call-ins and stuff like that. And I just like, I'm there, Jamie.
Yeah, you're Jamie. Yeah.
But Jose has actually had Terrence Yakey's wife on his show.
I tried to contact her for Donald's book too. And at the time she wasn't granting interviews, but now
she was the first one to get it. And like, since it happened.
Well, she did.
And she's actually called into the show too.
She did an interview in 1998, and that I forget who exactly did the interview with her, but it was like literally it's like one of these interview like pre-internet type things because it was 1998. And ever since that interview that she did in 98, I hadn't heard from her at all until the thing you're talking about right now. And I've tried to make contact with her again. Yeah. And now she's actually becoming more noticed, like on YouTube and things like that. Tanya Yiki.
She's a strong woman, man. It's pretty cool.
Terrence totally saw some stuff he shouldn't have, and he had some evidence in an evidence locker and was being followed by what he quoted to a friend as a Fed that he had to lose. And then he ended up committing suicide by slitting his wrist, dragging himself through a field for like a mile or whatever. Come on, you know, So give that out one more time, because I didn't even know that you were doing research for that, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's called Already Dead.
I
don't know if they have a separate RSS for that actual show, but you can get it if you go to Austin's show, the Underclass podcast, which is a really, really good, well-researched show.
Okay.
He just densely packs these shows into an hour. And he's covered a lot of really good parapolitical stuff. Or you can go to the No Way Jose podcast. And he's done a ton of work with Richard Booth on OKC as well. I think he did like an eight podcast series with him about OKC.
I think I was supposed to be on a show. I think I was supposed to be on a certain show with him. I won't name the certain show, but I think you might know what I'm talking about.
I can. I'll get you on.
The show never came to fruition, like based on the host or whatever, because he's too big for his britches, which is fine, whatever. But I think those guys did some stuff on Columbine too, which I think I was giving some of the information that I had on Columbine to one of the guys that ended up on there. And I was just glad because a lot of the Columbine stuff kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Recently, I was able to do a show with my friend Jen Small that was a witness to Columbine. We kind of went back to that. Like, I hate bringing it up with her, but we ended up going back to that subject. And she started talking about, she seemed to be comfortable talking about the other shooters that were there that never talked about.
She was a student?
She was a student that was locked up in the science wing, and she saw an adult male shooter, almost like a handler type, that looked like he was in the military, big muscles, and he was calming down Dylan Klebold when he was coming out of whatever trance he seemed to be in. And she also knew another shooter that was bringing in bombs at the beginning of it. And, you know, there are other witnesses that back her up. And
what shooting was it when the teacher said that she saw, like, the guys in the military, like, full metal jacket, you know, when she said that?
It was Parkland.
Okay. Parkland. Florida?
Yeah, in Florida.
Okay.
We had that interview.
David Hoglund.
Yikes, you know your shit, dude. Yeah, David Hogg. Yeah, during that time, we had the interview with the woman that no one can find now, the girl, the young girl that says she was walking with Nicholas Cruz, the supposed shooter of Parkland. She was walking with him in the hallway, but she could hear shooting way in the distance. And then he ends up going to McDonald's or whatever, and he's the only suspect in that. This shit happens all the time, dude. I'm telling you, like, with these shootings, like, they all kind of like mirror each other when it comes to. I'm going to be doing another show eventually, where I have all the clips from like all these other shooters, like the Batman Aurora thing, the Sikh shooting in Wisconsin.
It's usually three to four guys.
The
Batman one, that guy was programmed to kill. Like, I don't know. Is there evidence that there was other people there too doing it?
It's going to be in Hidden History 3, all the stuff I sent Donald. Like,
that guy was.
He had a Lee Harvey Oswald thing going on because
that all guy looked wild.
He was drugged up. He was drugged up. And the only guy that, you know how they said he was dressed as the Joker for that?
Yeah.
That wasn't the case. He had red hair, right? I'm a comic book fan. He was not dressed as a Joker. The guy that put that out into the media was the police commissioner of New York City, who had nothing to do with that investigation at all. But anyway, but I digress. Anyway, So you've been very gracious with your time, and I love you, dude.
Talking to you, Chris. Thanks for having me on, dude.
I hope you'll come back again, and just tell everybody. Do you have any like Cash App or PayPal, anything where people can support your efforts? Because you put out a lot of quality work over the years, and I'm someone that, you know, I put my Cash App thing, the PayPal thing out right now, and I don't really like to do that, but.
Oh, man, you deserve it.
No, but I'm just saying, is there anyone that, and by the way, that t-shirt is heavy metal, it's kick-ass, and I love it, and
that's St. Olga of Kiev.
Okay, so maybe it's not heavy metal or whatever.
It looks like a black metal shirt.
It looks like a D-side or something. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like D-side or whatever. But just tell everyone that can support your efforts if there is a place for them to do that.
No, man. I don't need any cash from anybody. I just want people check out the Homestead page on Instagram, Rising Tide Homestead, and you can reach out to me. My personal Instagram is all screwed up, screwed with a K.
Okay.
And if you know the reference, you know the reference.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You can reach out to me if you want to talk about jiu-jitsu or homesteading or you know, parapolitical conspiracies, you know?
Okay.
All right. Or you're interested in Russian Orthodoxy. I can help everybody with all that kind of stuff.
Well, this has been great. And, you know, I hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it, man.
All right. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And until you see me again, take care.